In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week beginning November 9th, 2007, this is the Rain Report, available as a free weekly download for retransmission under a Creative Commons license from therainreport.com. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. It seems that everywhere you turn these days, there's an overly restrictive ordinance banning everything from birdhouses to radio transmitters. How can you protect yourself from getting stung by these so-called CCRs? Just ask Brennan Price, N4QX, an associate with Axon, Veltrop, and Harkritter, as well as volunteer counsel for the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League.
So how do you protect yourself when you're buying property? Just so happens that I have a little bit of expertise in this area over the last year. This is 289 Elmfield Street, West Hartford, Connecticut. It is the new QTH for Ed4QX. It's a four-bedroom, two-bath cape, one-and-a-half floors, two-car garage. Lots of trees. There's a tree in the back. There's a tree in front. Perfect for stringing wire antennas. I am not a big gun DXer. I am not a contester. My desire in amateur radio is to put an antenna, a wire, up in some trees, run some coax or some ladder line to it, and have a little bit of fun. That's what I want to do. You need to determine what you want to do. My answer might not be the same as your answer, but the first thing that I thought of when I was looking at houses was, what do I want to do? Well, it wasn't the first thing, but one of the things I thought of was, what do I want to do amateur radio-wise? I want trees so I can hang a wire, and I want to avoid covenants which say something very strict, like you can't hang a wire in trees or you can't make a radio transmission. How do you protect your rights? Here's how I did it. Step number one, before you start looking at houses, you get an attorney who can handle your closings, if closings are done in the state or are done by attorneys in the state, and not only to do the closing, but also to take a look at the property and any conditions or restrictions that apply before you close. You are spending possibly millions, likely hundreds of thousands, certainly tens of thousands of dollars on your home. This is the biggest purchase that I just made. It will be the biggest purchase you make. It far and away exceeds any car that I've ever bought. It exceeds the cost of my law school education by about four times. It is very serious business, and you're committing yourself to a lot of financial responsibility here. When you're talking about this kind of money, spending another couple thousand dollars on an attorney to look at some restriction documents for you is peanuts. And if you're looking to cut corners and you want to save a couple thousand on that front, it's really not worth it. You want to hire somebody, and I hired somebody, even though I'm an attorney myself. I do patent litigation for a living. I just came from Florida, where I was next to a swamp looking through people's file cabinets, looking for information on a particular product. That's what I do. I know how to read a deed restriction. I don't know what it means, so I wanted to hire a real estate attorney who I trusted. You will want to have your attorney review W9WU's letter, or not writer, for the suitability in your state. He or she may have some suggestions about how it can be changed for this particular state. In my state, my attorney read it and then pointed out, well, you know, the standard contract of sale here in Connecticut basically allows the buyer to back out for any reason after the title search. The title search will be conducted and any restrictions will be noted then. And if it turns up any restriction at all, you're allowed to back out. So in my case, it was a little bit of protective overkill. But it might not be the case in another state, and you need to determine what the case is in your state, and that's why you need to get an attorney. And I don't want to be your attorney unless you live in Connecticut, and if you call me in Connecticut, I'm going to refer you to Yona Gregory, because she did this job for me. Step number two, you want to re-educate your agent. Buyer's agency has really taken off in the last couple of years, and there's been a shift in the law recently about who the buyer's agent represents. Real estate agents, traditionally, whether they've been retained by the buyer or in order to show property, or retained by the seller in order to sell property, have traditionally represented the seller, period. They owe a duty of honesty and truthfulness and fair dealing to the buyer. But traditionally, even if you go out as a home purchaser and get a buyer's agency, that buyer's agency is still representing the seller. That has changed in some states. In some states, the buyer's agent is now representative of the buyer, and they owe the duty of fair dealing and honesty and truthfulness to the seller. In Connecticut, the buyer's agent represents the buyer. It could be different in your state. You need to know. Your attorney can tell you. Either way, just that's an answer that you ought to know so that you know where your agent is coming from. But you should explain to the agent the importance of amateur radio to you. Insist on the rider or other protective language in the contract of sale that your attorney is reviewed for your protection. If they don't want to do it, find another agent. There are plenty out there. Once you set your sight on the property, you could check the land records, determine any covenants. This is something that if you don't feel like you can do yourself, you could refer to your attorney or a title searcher. However, most town halls are very welcoming and accommodating, and it's something that most people can do. When you check the land records, you go back far enough to the original subdivider or a previous seller. You may find restrictions. You may not find any restrictions. If you don't find any restrictions, you can take the full benefit of PRB1. Sometimes you might find a clear restriction. This is especially true in newer households, especially those constructed in the late 1970s, early 1980s or so, which specifically call out amateur or citizens band or any other hobbyist radio and say that you can't transmit on the property, period. Okay? Even if you just want a wire, a covenant like that could be very harmful because it is enforceable. You know, we don't even get into the building code, you know, keying a handheld. By the definition of this restriction, is a violation of this covenant. If you find something like that, you need to make a hard decision. You need to decide whether you ought to move on or whether you're happy operating from your car or happy operating portable from the park on field day. That's, unfortunately, the only remedy you have right now. If you're faced with something that restrictive, your remedy is not to buy.
You're listening to an excerpt from a 2007 Dayton Hamvention talk by Connecticut attorney Brennan Price, N4QX. We'll conclude this excerpt from his Amateur Radio and the Law Forum presentation in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, being subsidized by Merle Heinlein, KB9NOH. See his bio on QRZ.com.
And then, for some case, you may find for some older subdivisions, say, late 1950s era, in Connecticut at least, you may find some language in between, such as no structures shall be constructed on the property aside from a single-family dwelling and a two-car garage. Well, then you get to asking yourself, does a wire hung from trees count as a structure? What if the wire is coming out of my house and I have coax of the house? Could that not be part of the single-family dwelling? And then you'll go around the neighborhood and you go, other homes in this neighborhood and in this subdivision have tool sheds. This seems to be in violation of the covenants. Are these tool sheds even allowed? Does that give me any rights? Well, that's when you have to go back to your attorney and have the attorney review the restrictions. The law governing deed restrictions and their interpretation and their enforcement will vary from state to state. I can't tell you what that condition that I just pointed to and that I had to deal with means in any state other than Connecticut. The same language might not mean the same thing in another state. The attorney that you hire needs to hash this out. I consulted my attorney with respect to that language. It turns out that this particular covenant is very common in deeds and subdivisions originating in the late 50s in Connecticut, and it has about 6 or 7 reported cases in Connecticut case law. Connecticut tends to favor property owners' rights and read covenants very liberally to permit free use of land. The leading case on this covenant involved a case where the homeowner had a single-family dwelling with an attached two-car garage, and he wanted to build another two-car garage detached from the dwelling. His neighbor sued him. The judge looked at the covenant and looked at the word and said, there's no reason why a two-car garage can't be a part of a single-family dwelling. So a single-family dwelling encompassing a two-car garage is simply a single-family dwelling in Connecticut, and an additional two-car garage is the two-car garage. So a single-family dwelling with a two-car garage plus a freestanding two-car garage complies with this covenant in Connecticut. As a general rule, anything that is not freestanding and is connected to the house in Connecticut is not considered a separate structure for the purposes of this covenant in Connecticut. I'm not telling you to go out in any other state and look at this and feel free to put a wire in a tree. That's something that you need to determine in your state. Connecticut has very favorable law on this subject. Your state may be very different. That's something you need to check with your attorney about. So your attorney needs to hash this out, and you make your decision about whether to buy only after you have your attorney's opinion, you understand it, and you concur with it. That's my experience. I hope it's helpful.
Brennan Price, N4QX, an associate with Axon, Veltrop, and Harkritter, and a volunteer counsel for the American Radio Relay League. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2007, Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ, wishing you very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.